Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai
Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Adaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Adaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, 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 Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Shri
Chaitanya
Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 16, entitled The Pastimes of the Lord in His Childhood and Youth.
Sisya ganilaya puna vichara vilas vijabale sabaji odacha prakash.
After coming back from East Bengal, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again began educating others. By the strength of his education, he conquered everyone, and thus he was greatly proud.
Daba Vishnu Priya Takuranira Parinaya Daba Chakariva Prabhu Digvijaya Jaya.
Then Lord Chaitanya married Vishnu Priya, the goddess of fortune, and thereafter he conquered a champion of learning named Keshava Kashmiri.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared 500 years ago, and as the son of a Brahmin, and showed extraordinary symptoms of learning in his youth. Very quickly, he assimilated knowledge, and he became expert in teaching Sanskrit grammar, and also in the art of nyaya, in the art of logic. At that time, Navadvipa was very famous. This art of Nyaya philosophy is an ancient philosophy of logic by which Vedic conclusions were being established. But then the Buddhist philosophy came up. And as the Buddhist philosophy came up, this Nyaya was sometimes defeated by Buddhist argument. Then in Mithila, the scholars developed a philosophy known as Navanyaya, or the new Nyaya, the new logic. And that stood very strongly, and Buddhism had no chance to possibly uphold its conclusions in front of Navanyaya. However, Mithila became very famous because of this. And therefore, in Mithila, they had a rule that anyone could hear this philosophy, but no one could take any notes. Right? So no one could write it down, so that no one could take it away from Mithila. But then, this scholar from Navadvip named Vasudev Bhattacharya, he went there. And Vasudev Bhattacharya, he heard that Navanyaya philosophy. But Vasudev Bhattacharya was so brilliant that Vasudev Bhattacharya, he memorized the whole thing. He memorized it all, he understood it all, and he brought the entire philosophy back to Bengal, that's Navanyaya, and then developed it further. So for this feat, he got the title Sarvabhauma. And therefore, Vasudev Bhattacharya became Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And in that way, which means the entire earth, he who conquered the entire earth, because no one could do such a thing. But Sarvabhauma, therefore, was the best of the entire world, top in the world, number one. So in this way, this philosophy had become established, especially in Navadvipa, and developed further, and Mithila disappeared into the background. And Navadvipa became the seat of this particular doctrine. And Nimai Pandit became very learned in that tradition and excelled to a point where it went beyond anything anyone had ever displayed. He would present arguments that no one could defeat, and then he would defeat them himself, and then everyone was thinking, that was amazing. Then he would defeat those arguments as well, until everyone was utterly confused. That was his pastime in his youth. Of course, no one knew the identity of Nimai Pandit. And Nimai Pandit was acting as a scholar, in terms displaying his learning. And as such, he apparently was very proud, and no one dared to come in front of him. Of course, it is described that then one day, a very famous scholar, a scholar of even greater reputation, came from Kashmir. This scholar, known as Keshav Kashmiri, he had defeated many others, and therefore he had accumulated great wealth that various kings had given to him. So he was followed by a whole caravan of elephants and horses and camels and were carrying many books with him and many assisting brahmanas and servants. And he was known as a Digvijay Pandit, a pandit who could conquer all directions. So as the pandit was approaching Navadvip, the entire Brahmin community was in great anxiety, because, you know, if he defeats us, that will be the end of our reputation. That is not a good idea. So most of the brahmanas decided that they would leave town to visit some relatives who were not well and all these things. But they left Nimai, and they thought, let Nimai debate with this scholar, because Nimai is very young, but he's very brilliant. He's absolutely very brilliant. And you never know, maybe Nimai will defeat this scholar. In that case, we'll become very famous. Very famous, because we can say only a boy from Navadvip defeated this great scholar. Whereas if Nimai loses, then, you know, we'll just say, oh well, this pandit, he only defeated a boy of Navadvip. What can you expect, you know? So in this way, Bengalis have always been good in politics. Right? So even 500 years ago, this was in the good sense, not in the bad sense, but in the good sense. So so it is said. It's not my statement, you know, so when I say like that, I hear some laughing and so on. Well, how can he say like this? But it's not that I'm saying this. This is what Srila Prabhupada, who was a Bengali, was telling us. So I'm only repeating what I heard. In fact, they said of Srila Prabhupada, they said that one Western disciple said he didn't like Indians. Prabhupada said, oh, you don't like Indians? Why you don't like Indians? He said, no, but he said, because Indians are very tricky. They're very tricky. But not you, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, no. You are wrong. I am very tricky. I tricked you all into this Krishna consciousness. is politics for a higher cause. Anyway, the Bengali pundits so decided that Nimai was the chosen one to argue with the Digvijayi pundit. And time was scheduled for a debate, actually. But what happened was there was some meeting prior to the actual debate, prior to the big public discussion. There was already a meeting that just happened coincidentally. They met each other on the bank of the Ganga, and then a discussion took place there. And that discussion was that Nimai was taking a very humble position, actually. And he's saying, I'm just a student of Sanskrit grammar. You are a great, great scholar. I cannot compare to you. How can I debate with you? This is not possible. And then the pundit was tempted to show his learning. So in that cause, Nimai asked him to make a poem about the Ganga. And the pundit recited 100 Sanskrit verses, and just like a storm. And so that everyone was just like amazed. And then he quoted the 64th verse. He quoted the verse. So, and then he said, could you please explain the five different faults in this verse and the five different alliterations, which means the glories of the verse. So then the pundit was shocked and he said, I recited these verses just like that, and how could you quote this verse? Some are very expert in poetry and others are sutidar. They have a memory, whatever they hear once, they can remember. So in this way the pundit was shocked. And then he said, faults in this verse? There are no faults in this verse. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out the verses, the faults in the verses. And in this way, the pundit was defeated right there and then, and people were laughing. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told them, no. He said, Sanskrit is very complicated, and even the poetry of very famous poets such as Vidyapati and Chandidas are full of grammatical mistakes. No. It's still a wonderful feat to recite so many verses in glorification of the Ganga, just composing them on the spot. So in this way he kept the prestige of that pundit intact, and at the same time he defeated him. And in that way he endeared himself to that Keshava Kashmiri pundit. The pundit was worshipping the goddess Saraswati, and he felt that Saraswati has let me down. Then he did a puja to Saraswati, and his main question was, why did you let me be defeated by this boy? Then at night, Saraswati appeared in a dream, and Saraswati explained that that boy was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who she worshipped, and that therefore there was no question and that of defeating him, and rather the Kashmiri pundit should surrender unto Nimai. Which he then did, and he became a great surrendered Vaishnava. It is said then that in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it is described that Lord Chaitanya said that it was not befitting for you to become proud. Because one who is truly learned is like a tree which is laden with many fruits, and the branches of such a tree will naturally bow down. So in this way, the humility was highlighted. So we can understand that Nimai's learning, which he displayed, in one sense came to a peak in that meeting with the Keshava Kashmiri. And Nimai's so-called pride and all that, now he was using all the learning to emphasize humility. So we can understand that the life and pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu serve a particular purpose, and that it's not just everything, rather, is staged in these pastimes, and everything is a particular lesson to be emphasized. Because there is so much scholarly wrangling, there are so many learned scholars in the Vedic tradition, who all are very expert at juggling Sanskrit grammar, and then ultimately reach their own conclusions. But it is stated, Tarka Pratistha Shruttya Vibhina Nasa Varisir Madana Binam Dharmasya Tattva Nitam Guhayam Mahajana Yena Katasapanta, that simply by logically interpreting the scriptures, one will simply find that one scholar has a different opinion than another scholar. And in the end, one cannot know the truth, because the truth, it will remain hidden in the hearts of the devotees. And therefore, one must become the servant of a devotee. And in that way, by following in the footsteps of the devotees, then one can be successful. So, that is the ultimate conclusion of this this encounter that took place. And with that, we see that learning is placed in its position. That learning in itself is not valuable. That interpretation, according to Sanskrit grammatical rules of Vedic texts, is not the essence. Although this had become the practice, the essence is the conclusions of the Vedas, the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas, which is often lost, as it is said in Bhagavad Gita, as Krishna says, those or Vedavadarata, or the Vedavadarata are the ones who are bewildered by the conclusions of the Vedas. So, by the flowery language of the Vedas. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvashya saham rini sanivisto matas mitir jnam apohanam scha Vedaista sarve raham eva vidyo vedanta krita vedavit eva chaham. So, Krishna says that I am within the hearts of all living beings. From me, forgetfulness and remembrance arise. I am the purpose of all the Vedas. And I am to be known by the Vedas, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So this sums up the whole thing, that Krishna is within our heart, and that really through Krishna, within our heart, we get transcendental knowledge. Not by reading books, but by what Krishna reveals to us, ultimately. Because one can read and read and study Vedic literature, but it is not an academic process. It is a process of realizing this knowledge within the heart. And the first prerequisite established by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Srila Rupa Goswami is Ado Guru Padasraya. First take shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master, then one can understand properly. So first this process, Dharmasya Tattvam, Nitam Guhaya. First, this process of submission. Without submission, one will become bewildered by the Vedas, because after all, there is so much knowledge, and then so much argument, and then so many different types of worship, and then Sankaracharya, who explains that all these kinds of worship are only external, and that beyond that there is actually the impersonal Brahman. But the Vaishnavas are going beyond. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went beyond this interpretation of Sankaracharya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out that the interpretation of Sankaracharya was not correct. Sankaracharya is basically saying this. He's saying that Brahman is eternal, it is therefore absolute, and Brahman cannot change. He also points out Brahman is all-pervading. So because Brahman is all-pervading, and because it is what it is and never changes, therefore if it looks that there is variety and form and all these things, then Sankaracharya says, then that must logically be illusion. So this is the philosophy of Vivartavad, where we mistake a rope for a snake. In the dark we see a rope and it looks like a snake. So we see variety in this world, we see form, we see beauty, and Sankaracharya says, no, this is all illusion, because Brahman cannot change. But then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, and he said, Brahman is not the Supreme Lord. He said, Brahman is the energy of the Supreme Lord. Hiranmayena patrena satyasyapitam mukam tattvam pusan apavrinu satyadharma drishyate, which is from the Isupanishad. So according to Sankaracharya, the Upanishads are sruti and therefore hard evidence. It is apurseya, it is not from a human source, directly coming from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, arguments from the Upanishads are very strong. No one will argue against, also not Sankaracharya. And there it is stated that this Brahma Jyoti, this Jyoti is the effulgence of the Lord. Hiranmayena patrena sanjasyabhitam mukham. So kindly remove this effulgence and show me your true face, it is said in the Isupanishad, which is one of the principal Upanishads. So, in the principal Upanishad, Isupanishad, it is established that Brahman is an energy. And that was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. Shakti Parinamavat. He's saying that the Shakti, the energy, can change. So, yes, so many things can change. All the energy of the Lord. So, Brahman changes and transforms into many forms and energies and so on. And that is what we're seeing here in this world. And that is what we're experiencing. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was defeating the philosophy of Sankaracharya, and in that way aligning himself with acharyas like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, and such Vaishnavacharyas. So we can understand that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his pastime as Nimai Pandit, was first of all, the Vaishnavas, they were generally described as sentimentalists. those who are following bhakti, they are the whole day just calling out the name of the Lord, Hari, 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 and they are just, they're sentimental people. There is like not much philosophy there. It's, they are not the real philosophers. But no one could say so, because Nimai Pandit was the greatest learned scholar in his youth. So who could say that Nimai was a sentimentalist and that he did not have any scriptural knowledge when Nimai was such an incredible scholar? Who could argue? And of course, not only Nimai is a great scholar, the Vaishnavas rather have many great scholars. Jiva Goswami is such a scholar that practically who can stand up in argument against Jiva Goswami? So there is deep scholarship amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So this kind of reasoning that those who chant Hare Krishna have no scriptural knowledge is just another misunderstanding. But the essence of bhakti is not endless wrangling of scriptures, but to understand that the real purpose of the scriptures is simply to serve Krishna. That's all. To render selfless service to Krishna. And that's what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching. So in the end, Krishna consciousness is very simple. And I like that particular a story that came from Tribhuvanath. Tribhuvanath was an early disciple of Srila Prabhupada in the UK who passed on by now. And he told this story that is not recorded anywhere else, but I heard it from him. It's not in any written form in a biography, but he told me personally. He said that he was there when Srila Prabhupada came. And at that time, they had chosen him as the one who should offer a garden to Prabhupada. But when Prabhupada came, Prabhupada was so effulgent, and he was so overwhelmed seeing such an effulgent personality, and all the devotees fell on the ground. So he also fell on the ground and forgot to offer his garden. And then when he stood up to offer the garland, Prabhupada had already passed, and there were devotees in between, standing also, so he couldn't reach him so easily.
Anyway,
eventually he managed to offer that garland to Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada sat on the Vyasa's son, and Prabhupada then said that this Krishna consciousness is so simple, you might just miss it. Which I think is a phenomenal statement. Yeah, phenomenal. Something especially for us, because we are not simple. We are not simple. We're not from the simple age, right? We are from the age of complexity. If only we could be simple. No.
On my first journey to India,
a long time ago, some over 40 years ago, but I saw in the city of Benares an old man just dressed in one simple cloth. It was hot, and he was old. His body was all bent and crooked, and when I saw him, I thought, this man looks so simple. And next moment, the boat came ashore. He came off the boat and he turned around and he drank the water from the Ganga right in the middle of the city of Benares. And I was shocked. I was thinking, how can he drink water from the river like that? How is it possible? If we were like, what I don't need for my drinking water, a huge arrangement, if there's no whole arrangement behind it, forget it. I'm not going to drink water from the river. Not in the city like that. I mean, you're going to die. It's like, yeah, for sure. It's like, not three drops, but really like drinking. I mean, can't see. It certainly is something that no one in Europe could do, right? Not possible. No European can survive that feat. So to see that was, to me, something I was shocked. I think this man is so simple. He's just so close to nature. He can just drink the water from the river. It doesn't do nothing to him. So simple means like that. Simple means to live close to nature, to depend on nature. When we live in artificial arrangements, then we are no longer simple. Therefore, nowadays, the world population has become urbanized. In Asia knows its mega cities of like 20 million and plus, right? And life is no longer simple, right? Whatever it is, simple it's not. It's very complex. So therefore, this Krishna consciousness is very simple. The conclusions of the scripture are very simple. Just serve Krishna. That's all. Just serve Krishna. Nothing else. Okay? Very simple. And that's the aim of all the verses, of all the scriptures, to just serve Krishna. So, first, Nimai was this incredible scholar. And he was explaining the Vedic texts left and right, and arguments, and defeating his own arguments, and like this, with great learning, presented Krishna consciousness. Then he became a devotee. He went to Gaya and he met a spiritual master. He comes back, and when he comes back, his Sanskrit teacher, Gangadas Pandit, asks him to start again picking up his service. And he starts teaching again, Sanskrit grammar. But this time, he was explaining very systematically and with great learning how the root of every word ultimately is Krishna. And he proved it, right? He proved it by Sanskrit grammatical rules. And no one could argue. And this went on for weeks. And for weeks he is just explaining every word, every Sanskrit word, and bringing it back to Krishna. He's saying, actually, the root of this word is Krishna. And then take another word and explaining, actually, and going through the different stages, therefore the root of this word is Krishna. And for 2 weeks he's just explaining like this, and all the students are just shocked, you know. They went to his teacher to complain, said like, you know, we're not learning anything like this. He's just explaining that everything is Krishna. And then the teacher spoke to him and said, you must teach properly. But at the same time, the teacher also said that, like, yes, ultimately, he accepted it. Yes, you are correct. You are correct. But you shouldn't teach like that. You should just teach the normal. We always teach it. Yeah, that was his point. So everyone was satisfied, and Nimai was also satisfied because his teacher had acknowledged that he was correct. Now, if we look a little bit at this particular pastime, this is very interesting because we can see how Nimai, from ultimate complexity, from like such complex arrangements which went beyond the intellect of everyone and anyone, defeating his own arguments and defeating those again, I mean, that's complex. So from ultimate complexity, he went to ultimate simplicity by explaining that everything actually means Krishna. And that's actually what it is. See, but that's too simple for our mind. Everything actually leads to Krishna, and the mind go, yes, yes, but it cannot be that simple. Yes, yes, of course. No. Yes, we understand. Yes, yes, of course, everything leads to Krishna. But meanwhile, we think, nah, cannot be that simple. It's not possible. Yes, everything. Krishna, therefore, is the most important. Yes, of course. And meanwhile, we start to pay full attention to other things. And although philosophically we are convinced that Krishna is the most important, we don't act upon it. Just as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was testing his visitors, and then they had come from Calcutta to Navadvip, to Mayapur, to meet him there in his ashram. And then he gave this lecture explaining that Krishna is the most important and that nothing else is important. And everyone said, Jai, and everyone said, yes, and everyone said, this is wonderful. This lecture is so deep and it is just so exalted. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, and because Krishna is the most important, therefore there is no reason to go. Yes, there is no reason to go. Yes. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, we should all stay here. Yes, we should all stay here. And then he suddenly became very serious. So, then just stay. And then some people said, well, you know, but I have to go. No, really, I have to go home. I mean, so they're waiting for me, so many things. I have to go to work tomorrow. Someone said, I already bought the ticket. I said, that's okay, just throw it away. But nobody stayed. So we may be philosophically accepting that Krishna is everything. Bahu Jananamante Gyanamam Prapadite Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatma Sadurlava. After many, many lifetimes, we come to this point that we accept Vasudeva Savamiti, that Krishna is everything. But, and then we say, yes, I know Krishna is everything. Yes, I know it. I know it very well. I grew up with this. I know it from my birth. Huh? You might say, yes. She knows from her birth. I know it. But are we acting upon it? Krishna is everything. Not so easy. Not so easy. That's not so easy. You think that Krishna is everything, but I'm the other half. I'm the other part, you know. Krishna is everything, but I'm there too, and I'm the other part. And I'm, you know, I need this, I need that, and need, and by the end it's, you're finished with your needs, then, oh yes, Krishna also, yes. Here, we offer one apple. No, Krishna also needs something, we offer an apple. Nice apple, nice, for Krishna. See, I'm giving something to Krishna, nice apple, nice. Meanwhile, I need this, I need that, okay. Shopping list is made. So in this way, this Krishna consciousness is so simple. And that is what Mahaprabhu is showing, this simplicity in this particular pastime. First, the ultimate complexity of Nimai Pandit, and then suddenly it turns around, and the turning point is really this Keshava Kashmiri pastime, where he is showing that suddenly humility is the essence, and simplicity is the essence. No longer learning. No longer arrogant. So arrogant, Nimai Pandit. But suddenly Keshava Kashmiri is there and now he's humble. Nimai starts to act humble. He starts, I'm just some simple pandit of beginner's grammar. Usually, you know, that was not Nimai Pandit. But for the first time, no one had ever seen him act humble, but he starts to act humble. And then he points out to that pandit, after that, he winds up these pastimes very quickly. Then he goes to Gaya, comes back as a devotee, and so on. And then explains everything is Krishna. Everything. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed it in his own life. Because he went to Vrindavan, in the place of Krishna, and what more could he desire? Every tree that he saw was an old friend, and he embraced every tree. He sat there, the deers came from the forest, the cows came. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan was just overwhelmed. The boat went on the Yamuna, he danced, he embraced Govardhan. Vrindavan was was just multiplying his ecstasy, his love of God, a million times. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan, being Krishna, who returned to his abode. At one point, he jumped into the Yamuna, and then he didn't see any reason to come out, because being in the Yamuna was the perfection. Of course, you know, as he was under the water, he, in his consciousness, this was the perfection. He was in the Yamuna, what more to desire? Meanwhile, if you stay underwater a bit long, then after a while, bloop, 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 and that's it, right? Then you're finished. So his servant had to pull him out, because he couldn't understand the logic anymore of getting out of the Yamuna. That's how Krishna conscious he had become. I mean, because what is greater than taking bath in the Yamuna? And we think, well, how clean is the Yamuna? I don't know. I take bath in the Yamuna. Maybe I'll put my toe in the Yamuna, or maybe that's not respectful. Then maybe I'll put 3 drops of the Yamuna on my head in this direction. But where is our love? Right? Where is our love? When we Mahaprabhu just jumped in the Yamuna and didn't want to come out. And his servant had to pull him out. It was then that the servant decided, we've got to take him out of Vrindavan. It's getting out of hand here. It's no longer possible. I mean, we can't keep him here. He gets out of control. It's too much. No. We take him away from here. Give up his body here, and he doesn't care. In this way, we see the simplicity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he was the greatest scholar. His only focus, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Krishna is everything. So let us come to that state. Krishna. When I say that Krishna is everything, I mean that he is everything. Everything. So, this tape recorder, Krishna's energy. Microphone, Krishna's energy. The floor, Krishna's energy. That's one meaning. But then, behind, this is Krishna's Brahman energy. It is transformed. So everything you see is Krishna's Brahman energy transformed. Brahman, Brahman, Brahman energy. Krishna's energy transformed. But there is more than Krishna's energy. And the devotee is not satisfied just with knowing that everything is Krishna's energy. The devotee wants to see Krishna himself, because Krishna is the most amazing personality. So therefore, another way of saying Krishna is everything means that Krishna is the most important. He means everything to me. He's like the Lord of my heart. It means Krishna is everything to me. Everything. More than anything else. Krishna is everything to me. Everything else, I don't care. I care only about Krishna. Krishna is everything. This is what I really mean when I say Krishna is everything. Everything to me. Not like, I like Krishna. No, I really do. I do. Honestly. But I also like
question on the stairway.
Yeah.
This is the way I heard one explanation that by reading, say, for example, Prabhupada's books,
yes,
to get his association and looking for his mercy in this way, by reading books,
yes,
we're asking for mercy.
Okay.
Can you elaborate on this?
Yes, and then you take whatever you read in these books and change your life accordingly. And when you change your life according to the books, then you will begin to realize the books. Then the books will become to live. It will begin to live for you, because Shastra is not just books of learning. I can give an example of a cookbook. Imagine that I would be reading the cookbook every day, for hours and hours and hours. Then after some few years, I would really be expert at the cookbook. And then on the Sunday feast, I would stand here and I would recite for you some recipe. I would say, you cut the potatoes into cubes, and the cauliflowers, you slice them. And then, meanwhile, you are pressing some lemon juice, and, you know, you grate some ginger, and, you know, and then you make the... Anyway, I would describe the whole recipe like that, right? One after the other, recite. I mean, I would certainly get an applause, right, if I would memorize many such recipes. I mean, something different, you know, everyone would go like, well done. Well done, you remembered all the recipes. But greater still will be the applause for the one who's actually cooked the feast that we're going to eat. Not just memorizing the recipes, but putting them into practice. And then cooking the feast, that's what the recipes are for. So the Vedas, or these scriptures, are like cookbooks. They are meant to be put into practice. Without putting them into practice in our life, we don't get the full meaning. So if we want to read Prabhupada's books, then we must also adjust our life accordingly. And then the books come to life for us. They begin to live a life of their own. And our understanding of these books increases, and we understand them on a deeper level. Then when we hear Vasudev, Savamiti, Vasudev is everything, then we're thinking everything, yeah, he's everything, it's all the energy, he's everything. But that's only Brahman. And then we're thinking, yes, that's one understanding of Vasudev, is everything, Krishna's everything, is that everything is his energy, yes. But greater still is when there is a state of heart. Krishna is everything. He is everything. Nothing else I care about. Only Krishna. Ah, that's the great devotees. So gradually, by putting these scriptures into practice, we become such a great devotee.
So it's a question of application.
Speaking about simplicity, we encounter now more and more, it's a trend in our devotee society. Devotees, they try to take a distance from the overcomplicated dynamics of the meat industry and the milk industry, because they are correlating. And so some of them, they become vegans.
Interesting how you connect with simplicity.
I
would have never thought. Very tricky.
I mean, yeah.
Gosh. Vegan. Okay. You want me to make a statement about
it? Can I shut up? Or?
No, it's fine. You can put the Zoom lens if you want. I think that the vegan diet, which comes from basically not wanting to be part of the terrible way that animals are treated, are showing compassion and soft-heartedness in people, which is laudable. which I appreciate, I respect. So therefore, I respect people that are vegan. I think they're worthy of respect. Therefore, it's not my favorite activity to enter into an argument with them. However, sometimes they enter into an argument with us because we are lacto-vegetarians, we are using milk products. And they cannot always appreciate that, and sometimes some may say strong things like you're still part of the death culture. And all I can say is they are looking at the situation from material calculation. They are not looking at the situation from the perspective of devotional service, because they don't know about devotional service. We are looking at the world only from the perspective of devotional service, and that devotional service is the only good in this world. Shraddha Sattva Vishwas Kai Sutrina Nischai Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Krita Hai. So that is our conviction, that from Krishna Bhakti all good will come, or as Krishna Bhakti is transformed, devotional service only, all good will come. Yes. So we think that to just refrain from milk, which is produced from a destructive culture that mistreats animals, is, although nice in the spirit of compassion, it's not very potent. See, if we all say in this room we will not drink milk anymore, it's not a very potent approach to change the world or to change the destiny. Whereas devotional service is a very powerful tool which can change the destiny of the world. So when we take the milk of the cow and offer that milk to Krishna, that cow gets eternal benefit. If we don't drink milk from the cows, maybe, you know, there will be if lots of people become vegan, maybe there will be some less cows on the planet, maybe, that have to suffer. But they don't get any benefit, they just don't suffer. But that's only temporary. Right? So by devotional service, the cows get eternal benefit. Therefore, devotees should offer as much milk as possible to Krishna, out of their causeless mercy, to deliver all those living entities who are now in the bodies of cows and that are being mistreated, but to deliver them, to connect them, because once that milk is offered, they've started their devotional life and continue it. Neha Vikramana Sisti, says the Bhagavad Gita 2:40. So, from the transcendental perspective, one should offer milk. Then Srila Prabhupada emphasizes the importance of milk for developing finer brain tissue, that milk being in the mode of goodness. Then one might say, yes, but not the milk of today, because now it is homogenized and God knows what else. But when the devotees in Srila Prabhupada's presence complained about the milk in America having added vitamin D, which might not be vegetarian in origin, Srila Prabhupada said, don't worry about it. Just offer it. Go ahead. Milk is so important. So milk is so central to Krishna. He's Govinda, the Lord of the cows. Our whole culture is cow protection, is milk, is like that. Of course. We should gradually begin to protect our own cows and have ahimsa milk, but it's not so simple. And there's so many complications. and protecting cows in a world that is not designed for that. So it takes time. Even we don't know. Not everybody knows how to milk a cow. Kalindi, you know how to milk a cow? You ever milked a cow? You did, huh? Expert. It's good. Well, I do.
I don't know.
You don't know, but she knows. You're better than your father.
I know.
She already knew that. She knew that. So, yes, so like this, we should, whether the vegan people will understand my arguments or not, that's another matter. Because I'm now not responding to the vegans in general, I'm speaking now to devotees who become vegans. That I don't think that it is correct for devotees to become vegans. I think devotees should just do it the way Srila Prabhupada introduced it to us, and just have all these milk preparations and so on. That's how we should carry on. Okay, Krishna Balaram.
Yeah, I would like to ask, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is pastime when Lord Chaitanya is one with one devotee. I don't know if it's Shukramba Bhattacharya, but in his past,
Bhattacharya, Brahmacharya.
I don't know, there was
Shukramba
was
a Brahmacharya.
Satyabhama in the Krishna's Lila.
Huh?
It was like Satyabhama in the Krishna Lila.
Okay.
I don't know his name, if it's right.
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah, and then?
I would like to ask, because there is this pastime when he tried to all the time, like, serve Lord Chaitanya, like, in this mood, like Satyabhama, he just bring these oils, and he also make a nice bath for him, because...
Okay. That was Jagadananda Pandit.
Yeah, Jagadananda Pandit. And I would like to ask if they actually, like, externally look like that behave like this in Krishna Lila, but in deeper meaning, was like their pastimes, like Satyabhama,
okay,
and Krishna? Or
okay, well, you know, when you look at Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, right, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, who came again. And Balaram Holo Nitai, and Balaram is Lord Nityananda. And then we are seeing that all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also have a role in Krishna's pastimes. So they've all come again. Krishna, when he comes, he doesn't come alone, he comes along with his devotees. So we see that many of the devotees who were with Krishna come back and also appear in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the book Gaura Ganadesh Deepika is sort of a book that describes who is who. So sometimes the devotees are aware of that, and sometimes the devotees are not aware of that. Like in the Murari Gupta, in his diary, which is known as Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya, or sometimes just called the Kadacha, the diary of Murari, he describes that all these devotees who were in Navadvip before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were all great exalted devotees who had all been in Krishna's pastimes and now appeared again. But all these devotees, they did not know of themselves who they were, nor did they know of each other who they were, but they had a natural friendship with each other. So there we find that description, that like they didn't always know, you know, who they were in Krishna's pastime. They didn't always know. They didn't always walk around, there's Jagadananda, but he's actually thinking, Satyabhama, 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 I am Satyabhama. No, you know, no. He was simply Jagadananda. But getting into that mood, Satyabhama has a very strong nature. She's an associate of Krishna, one of the queens of Krishna, and she was very fiery and strong by nature, and kind of rebellious, and always that kind of lady. you know. And Jagadananda had that same sort of spirit, easily angered and strong-natured. So we see some parallels between the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the pastimes of Krishna. But it's not that while they are with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that they're always living out the pastimes with Krishna. No, sometimes there may be some remembrance like that, but most of the time they are in their identity in the Chaitanya Lila.
We are very often speaking about Achintya Veda, Veda Tattva. And this is Achintya Veda, Veda Tattva, this is Achintya Veda, Veda Tattva. Inconceivable, sometimes oneness and difference. Can you elaborate a little bit more around this topic, since it's a very important...
Okay, it's a big topic, of course, that, you know, at the end, to take on something big like that, you can't do it full justice, because Chintya Veda Veda Tattva could take a full lecture, or a one-week seminar, or like, you know, a whole book. But the essence of it is there is this mystery that everything is Krishna's energy. Huh? And everything you see is Krishna's energy. And yet, Krishna exists separate from that energy. Or there is the universe, which comes from Krishna, but Krishna walks within the universe. And how is it possible? How can Krishna walk in the universe? And how can you then say that Krishna is complete? Then you would say, if Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and if all this is his energy, then Krishna plus all the energy is God. That's what you would logically state. Yeah? But that's not a fact. Krishna is complete. Complete everything. He is everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Is everything. So, how is that possible? It seems to be contradictory. So, then the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam explains Janmadiyas Shriyatum Vyat Itardas Chate Svabhikyasarat Tene Brahmanigaya Adikavi Muyantiyat Surya, and so on. And it basically explains that Krishna is the origin of everything. And yet, he's independent of everything. He is abhigya, he's all-knowing, but he is swarat, he is independent. So this verse, the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, is Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. He is saying that Krishna is Om Purnam Madapunam Purmidam. He is complete. He's complete. And yet, all these energies are emanating from him. So, how is that? That's inconceivable. See, that's inconceivable. How can we understand that? But we see that it's true because Krishna ate the clay, and Madhya Yasoda looked in his mouth and she saw how Krishna, in his mouth, she saw the universes and she saw herself looking in the mouth of Krishna. So she saw that actually all the universes were within Krishna, and yet Krishna was within the universe. Just see. But because he's not bound to the laws of nature that we are bound by, therefore it's inconceivable, because it's very difficult for us to think outside of the laws of nature. Therefore, this inconceivable element comes in. Not that we pull it out like the joker in the card game, you know, when we don't know an answer. Yeah? When there's a philosophical point and we don't know the answer, we pull out achintya. Inconceivable. It's like a joker in the card game, you know, you can always pull it out. No, not like that. The essence of achintya is basically that it seems contradictory. How can Krishna be everything, and at the same time, how can he be manifest in his personal form and be complete? That seems contradictory. No, it's not. It's a fact. It's inconceivable how it's possible. But Maria Soda saw it. She saw it when she looked in Krishna's mouth. She saw that he was in the universe and that all and that the entire universe was within him as well. And how? You tell me. I mean, I can't make head or tail of it. It's inconceivable. Like that. Thus Krishna is simultaneously one and many. And that is inconceivable. That sums it up, sort of. I mean, now I can elaborate on it another time. Yes?
You mentioned about simplicity. So
simplicity.
I'm thinking when we should be simple and when we should not be simple. Because the world is not simple and people... Oh,
we should be tricky. Srila Prabhupada said, like a lion, you know, like a lion on the chase and a lamb at home. So at home, very simple. And outside, you can be tricky and you can be, you can pull out all those things. We can be like a lion on the chase. When we are in, yeah, when we have to argue with people who have different philosophies, yes, then we have to sometimes be strong in our arguments. Prabhupada was not shy in that regards. He was in MIT in Boston. And there was a man from India who was all the time saying, Swamiji, actually, it is all one. It is all one. It is all one. And Prabhupada just grabbed him in the end. He grabbed him by the shirt and pulled him up. And Prabhupada said, is this a shirt or a cotton ball? Is it all one? So Prabhupada was very strong like that. I mean, that wasn't, that didn't look humble, right? That looked kind of, I mean, Swamiji, what you're doing, Swamiji, please, Swamiji, calm down. And imagine the drama, you know, it's like, you could make a whole play of this, you know, and get some ladies like, Swamiji, please. it could be a whole drama like this. But come on, Swamiji grabs him by the shirt like this. Says, is this a shirt or a cotton ball? And then finally, Swamiji said to the devotees, he said, old men and children get away with anything. Yeah. So anyway, the point is, a lion on the chase and a lamb at home. So at home, very humble. That's the trick. Very simple. But some people, they're always simple. And if you're consistently always simple, and you just let them mistreat you, it's, if you take it and say, this is not mistreatment, I'm deserving much worse. The other day I met someone in Manipur who always has some problem with walking and walks with for many years with one of these metal canes, you know, from the hospital for many years now. And I asked him, so, well, how are you? He said, better than I deserve. I just thought, I'm going to remember that answer. That's a good answer. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, thank you for your teaching. I'm really grateful. more understand the relationship between Vishnu and Lord Krishna and Paramatma, mm-hmm. and how should I understand it, a little of it, bring it together, like not being,
Krishna, Ishvara, Parama Krishna Satsidananda Vigraha Anadira Diya Govinda Sravakarana Karunam. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says that Krishna is the origin, and then Krishna expands himself, Balaram. And then Balaram expands himself, and we get four Vishnu forms, Vasudev, Sankarsan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. And these expansions begin to deal with the material energy. See, Krishna, why would he bother with the material energy? He's, you know, the idea that there is a God, the Supreme Lord, who sits there like a supercomputer managing our lives. No. He is absorbed in his own pleasure pastimes. Therefore, Krishna expands himself. And when he expands himself to the Vishnu forms, like Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksaya Vishnu, and Ksiradaksaya Vishnu, they all, in these Vishnu forms, he has a relationship with the material energy, with the jivas who are in the material world, in the conditioned world, you see. So that's the difference. It's a matter of intimacy. In the form of Krishna, he's only dealing with the spiritual. And he comes in the material world to kill a few demons, but even then, he does that through his Vishnu expansions, actually. So, Krishna is always, therefore he's the origin. He's in his eternal pleasure pastimes. And in the expansions, as Vishnu, he begins to interact with this world also.
So Paramatma is that
Paramatma is in the
Vishnu.
Yes, it's Vishnu. It's Vishnu. Vishnu in the heart.
Yes. But so first Krishna, then he becomes Vishnu.
Yes.
Then also Paramatma.
Yeah, and Paramatma is in the heart. Vishnu in the heart. Yes. The size of a thumb. So they say. Lost.
In the same topic and to hit this last nail in the coffin.
Okay, last nail in the coffin. Whose coffin?
We're seeing the end of the answer. So I encountered this devotee and he presented the same arguments as you did.
Okay.
But he said that actually Srila Prabhupada wanted farm community.
Yes.
And devotees are failing.
Okay, we're a bit slow. We're a bit slow, but it doesn't mean that Srila Prabhupada ever thought that all the milk would just be provided from the farms. I don't know who that devotee is, but he's not a manager, I tell you that. Now, I happen to have been a manager for a long time, and I've managed for many years, as part of the project I was looking after, the Goshala in Vrindavan. And I know very well how many cows you have for producing milk. You know, and we, there's no way we can provide all the devotees with milk. We're lucky if we can provide the deities with milk. And for that, we have so many cows. And it's a huge arrangement. And we need so much land and this and that. If you really want to, you have your own cows and provide your whole community with milk, boy, we have to start buying land, seriously. It's not about farms and cows. We have to get rich. We should not do anything else but make money if we have to fulfill the desire of that devotee, because we got to buy half of the United States. You understand the point? So mathematically, it doesn't add up. That's what I'm saying. It's like, ultimately, all philosophy is great, but Srila Prabhupada was not just an airy-fairy philosopher. he was the most practical man. Most practical. He made Krishna consciousness practical. And for the sake of that, he was flexible. He was not a fanatic person. Not at all. He was ready to adjust, to go, you know, yes, we should have farms, yes, okay, but when we don't have them yet, yes, we should plow with bullocks only, yes, yes, but meanwhile use the tractor, no problem. Practical, very practical. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, we have some farms. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, we have some cows, but it's not enough to produce all the milk for the devotees. Then buy milk. You think Prabhupada would have said, as he said then, buy milk. You think today he would say, now you cannot buy milk because you were too slow in making the farm. maybe that's their Prabhupada, but that's not my Prabhupada. That's not my Prabhupada. My Prabhupada is practical. Because he always was. So that's, you know, as Srila Prabhupada said to Brahmananda, he said, another impractical suggestion. That would be my final line. Another impractical suggestion.
And the thing which hurts the most, it was that mathematically speaking, because those two industries are correlating, they say that actually we cannot buy 1 liter of milk with 1 pound. The usual price is like 4 or 5. And the devotees, they don't take responsibility, and to pay the extra money to some, let's say, unmixed god or something like that.
It's all material arguments, you know what I mean? You cannot buy 1 kilo of pure devotional service, you know. We're talking about bhakti. Don't let them drag us down to the material plane and material calculations and material arguments. We should stay on the spiritual plane. It's bhakti that counts. Forget all this material calculations. Calculate with Krishna. Calculate how much service someone has done. One moment that that cow is engaged in the service of Krishna is a glorious moment. This is the moment in millions and zillions and trillions and xillions of lifetime where this cow, who happens to be now a spirit soul caught into a suffering cow body, I don't know why, what karma this personality has, but who cares about the karma? Let this entity get the mercy now. Take that milk and offer it to the Lord now. It's about Krishna, it's about devotional service. Forget the rest. We can argue for the whole week until the cows come home.
Kadamba Kalana Swami Ki.
Jai! Jai.